Hello and welcome to the Outrider podcast, Shop Talk number 4, with my friend Laura Holly. I, of course, am Jason Quinn Malott. Not much to say this time around with this one, so let's get right to it. Here's my my conversation with my friend Laura about struggling writer stuff. Ah! Hey, Laura.
Hey.
How are you?
Oh, fine. How are you?
I am in my stocking feet and an undershirt. I am wearing pants, but, just so you know.
I'm comfortable.
Yeah. Well, I got home from work and, after we get done here, I have to go pick up my mom at the airport. She's coming back from Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
But that's not until 9 o'clock when I have to pick her up. So
I see.
We have plenty of time.
Cool.
Are you on call today or you've been on call most of the week, right?
I was on call Wednesday.
Ooh.
They called me in.
Yeah. I saw the post on Facebook. Sucked. I figure you weren't happy.
No, not very. They put me on a unit that I've never been on before.
Ooh.
And, was not a fan of it.
Yeah.
I'm used to my kids because I work with troubled kids.
Uh-huh.
And they put me on a unit with very, very psychotic adults.
Oh.
Which was
not
fun. Yeah. I'm not used to acute psychosis. So.
Right. Most people aren't used to acute psychosis.
You hope not. And if they are, it's like.
Yeah.
I like writing about it, but I don't think I enjoyed experiencing it.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I sometimes think, I know I'm not. I mean, I live in a part of Wichita here where I'm near a lot of the homeless services.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a place called the Lord's Diner. It's a, I guess you could call it a soup kitchen. It's a dispensary type of place.
Okay.
And I'm also near the parole office.
Yeah.
Right.
Conveniently located.
Yeah. And they're the county lockup and the sheriff's office. So,
Yeah. Fun people.
Yeah. It's actually, you would think that, oh my God, that must be kind of a creepy part of town. But, because I'm near the sheriff's office and the county jail and the parole office, mm-hmm. The people that are going to cause you problems don't want to be in this neighborhood.
That's true.
Good
point. It's actually safer.
So, I hear a lot of sirens. In the trips that I've, it kind of reminds me of the trips I've made to New York where you just kind of always hear stuff going on and it's.
Okay.
So about as close as I'm going to get to living in New York, unless I go visit my sister and just kind of, accidentally stay there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're both reading Station 11 now, aren't we?
We are.
How far along are you?
Not very.
Okay.
Let me see. I'm at I've gotten to the beginning, the setup.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the, just starting to get to know the troop.
Okay, so you're...
I'm like 55 pages in.
Okay.
Not very far.
And I was reading fast thinking you were ahead of me.
No. I haven't had much time.
Yeah, I'm probably only about 50 pages ahead of you. I've just broke 100.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm not too far apart. Mm-hmm. I'm really liking it so far.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure if I felt like, I'll wait till I finish the book. I'm not sure if the setup was initially necessary.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only parts that I'm having an issue with. I think she might have been able to just start right you know, 20 years later.
Right.
But I don't know. It's interesting because usually when you think of the, you know, post-apocalyptic storylines, you know, you think of like a ragtag group of people coming together, you know.
Right.
And it's you don't think of entertainers.
Right.
So it's an interesting twist. So.
Yeah, it kind of everybody's initial fantasy of some kind of post-apocalypse is, you know, survivalist fantasies, you know, guns and, you know, lots of.
Yeah, The Walking Dead.
Right, right. Or or The Road, you know.
Yeah.
McCarthy's
yeah.
The Road or something like mm-hmm. that where it's. And, you know, it doesn't. A lot of the stuff doesn't tend to want to take into account that, you know, people most of the time just want to be left the hell alone. You know,
yep.
They want a little house. They want a quiet neighborhood.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So you haven't gotten into the stuff. You've been introduced to the actress with the graphic novels, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So you got, yeah. I think you'll start to get a kick out of it. Because
yeah,
the way things start to
I'm
knit together.
And I think yeah, so far so good.
Yeah.
We've had more time to read it.
Yeah. But, well, how many days do you have off now?
I worked the last 6 out of 7 nights.
Wow.
This is my first night off.
Do you have the weekend off?
Yes, thank God.
Oh, good.
So, yeah. I'm on call next Wednesday too, though.
Oh, yuck. Yuck. Yeah. No, I finished Good House by Peyton Marshall a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and that was really good.
Okay.
I think I've told you about that one before, but
yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah,
it's another kind of dystopian, futuristic novel.
Okay.
Yeah, that was really good. And I've got her scheduled to be on the podcast. I'm going to talk to her on the 22nd.
Cool.
So that's going to be fun.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
looking forward to that. It'll give me a chance to she will be the first guest on the podcast who is actually an Iowa Writers Workshop graduate.
Oh, boy.
Right. Yeah.
You're going to have fun with that.
Oh, yeah, I know. I'm definitely going to have to bring up the conspiracy question. I think there are people who know me that listen to the podcast that would send me nasty emails and you know, scream at me if I didn't bring up the pseudo-conspiracy theory.
Yeah, that's funny.
You know, there are people I've met here in Wichita after I moved back who, you know, I brought up the conspiracy theory too, and for a while they thought I was – you know, just really kind of nuts and bonkers. And I had to explain to him, I go, it's not the smoky room, star chamber, you know, conscious kind of planned out and thought out conspiracy theory. You know, like there was a group of writers that just wanted to dominate the thing and take over the world.
Yeah.
It's more just kind of that, you know, conspiracy by accident type of idea. That
right.
Iowa's been around for so long and has produced so many graduates who have – not all of them have become writers. Most of them have become editors.
And, control.
Right. And it's not a conscious thing. But when you go through an MFA program, for good or bad, and I think if you and I were honest, we would acknowledge that there is a certain quality to our aesthetic that came from being at Naropa.
Oh, sure.
And
absolutely.
And so, you know, these people go through Iowa with some really strong personalities as instructors. I mean, you look through the history of the people that have taught at Iowa, and it's like,
mm-hmm.
who the fuck wasn't an important American writer that taught there?
Yeah.
Right? And
right.
That's definitely going to influence the aesthetic of the graduates. And
oh, definitely.
And because there are so many of them in the publishing world, not just as writers, but as editors and agents and whatnot, that's going to have a certain – it's going to put a certain bend on the broader American fiction aesthetic. And that's just kind of where I go with the with my conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
That is the – it's the the Iowa's Writers' Workshop is kind of the dominant aesthetic. Of course, I also think it's gotten a bit crippled of late, but
yeah. Well,
but you know,
yeah.
I always used to think there was the Iowa Writers' Workshop first novel template. You know, it had to be that semi-autobiographical Buildings Roman thing.
Uh-huh.
Right? So, Marshall didn't obviously write a semi-autobiographical Buildings Roman unless she's a visitor from the future.
Yeah, well, you never know.
So, yeah.
Cool.
That'd be interesting to talk to her, kind of what her take is on it, having been in Iowa and at the Writer's Workshop.
Oh yeah, that'd be really interesting.
So what's next on your reading list?
I haven't really thought ahead yet. I'm still just trying to get through what I can. So, not sure.
Not sure.
No. Oh, I'll probably ask you for a recommendation when I'm done.
Well, you know what I picked up a couple of books recently that really kind of caught my attention. I got a stack here. Hold on just a second. Well, okay, one because it caught my attention, and unfortunately, she was Azara Nafisi. Hafizi. She wrote a book called Reading Lolita in Tehran. Do you remember hearing about her?
No.
Okay. They're nonfiction. They're memoirish type of. It's a memoirish type of book. The Reading Lolita in Tehran, but she's got a new one out, and she was actually here in Wichita last night, and I wasn't able to go see her. But she's got a new one out called The Republic of Imagination, America in Three Books, and it's kind of her little memoir about teaching English and American novels in Iran.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's intense.
So she, let's see, teaching Huck Finn and The Great Gatsby and things like that in... Yeah, where is it? Yeah, and it's kind of this. Yep. I haven't started reading it, but Rebecca, the inventory manager at Watermark, the ex-girlfriend, mentioned it to me because she said it kind of went along with my, you know, general argument that that literature has a positive social impact if it's done correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm always looking for. Nice. Books and other writers that support my my broad theory. It's a little bit, you know, it's like trying to find validation. Yeah, I really am smart. But yeah, The Republic of Imagination. I think you might like that one. And then I picked up a book of poems by Taylor Molly, who was last week's guest on the podcast. His new one, Bouquet of Red Flags. And so, yeah.
Cool.
That's, you know, and I've still got to read Laird's book and Eleni Sikleanos' book and, you know.
Yeah, you got some stuff to read.
And Wittgenstein's Mistress
oh, yeah.
Samuel Beckett's Molloy. You know, I just, fuck.
I'll keep you busy.
Yeah. So have you managed to squeeze in any writing?
No, but I'm keeping a little note card holder of one-liners and little tidbits.
Well, that's cool.
So not much is filled up in it, but I've put a few things in there.
Anything good? Anything interesting you want to share?
Not really. It's just kind of like they're just, yeah, honestly.
Yeah.
just, you know, like a first line might pop in my head, and I'll write it down and
oh, cool.
put it on a note card and put it in there.
Good place
probably
to
never
start.
To be seen again, but you know,
it's a start. Something. It's a start.
Yep.
Keep going. I think it'll happen. I think it'll turn into something. I have faith.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
What are you even working on?
Well,
still working on the book.
Still working on. I'm focused on the second book in that little mytho trilogy thing I've been working on.
Mm-hmm.
I finally think I got a roll on it. Some things are starting to fall into place, at least on the big mental scope of the whole thing. 'Cause I had at the last writer's salon, I did a big picture of the thing. So I drew the circle for Campbell's hero's journey, you know,
mm-hmm.
with the line through the middle of it representing the split between the field of time and the field of no time, you know, the mytho time down underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And actually centered my three stories where they were in that cycle, because the plan was to have this story that these three stories that would in a microcosm be the hero, each one would be its own hero's journey, but the three of them put together would be a broader heroic journey. So I put the stories in the quadrants that they represented, and I almost thought maybe I should write four books, but oh, but Jesus.
Right?
But no, I think three is best because it, you know, it puts one story up in the quadrant of the journey out, you know, answering the call and making the journey and then suffering the death or the symbolic death. And then you have the middle story that's down in the underworld, which is completely devoid of, you know, of time and of connection and sense. So there's got to be this whole striving to make sense out of stuff. And then you have the third story, which is the bringing the boon back to, you know, the real world, to the field of time, and bestowing the boon upon on civilization so that it advances.
Yeah, four would make it kind of, yeah, four wouldn't fit.
Yeah, because then you'd spend, yeah, you'd have to have two books down in the underworld, and that you could really do that in one.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, you know, the big blockbuster movies they've been doing lately out of popular books and splitting the last book into two.
Right, except this would have been like...
It's like, you don't need to do that. You can put it in one.
Right. This would have been like making, you know... Turning the Star Wars, the original Star Wars trilogy into four movies and splitting The Empire Strikes Back.
Exactly.
And,
necessary.
totally unnecessary. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I'm wondering if I might though put it on hold to get through Wittgenstein's Mistress. Just to see what that does to my sense of structure and time.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know.
We got stuff working. That's good.
Well, it doesn't feel like it. You know,
that's
the thing. I mean, you know, the hardest thing I'm finding is getting up at 5 when the alarm goes off.
Oh, yeah.
It's now creeping up to like 5:30, 5:45 when I actually roll out of bed.
You know, darkness, the time change. It's like, oh.
No, it's been like that for 2 years or so.
Oh, has it? Okay, I was just thinking it's recently.
Right.
Well,
right.
Then maybe it's something else.
Yeah. What sucks is that the back of my mind, I keep thinking, oh, it's age.
Oh.
Right. And. Uh-huh. I don't think it is. I think it's burnout.
Yeah.
In a way.
Could be. You've been doing that a long time.
Yeah, and I've put a lot of pressure on myself, a lot of stress.
Yep. Yes, you have.
And know, the hardest thing for me ever to do is ask for help. Of course, what kind of help do I need? And
Yeah.
who offers that up, you know, especially when you live alone.
Yeah. Well, so it's a solitary thing, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that it is.
Yeah, I could never set a schedule. I don't know how you've been able to do it for so long. I just can't do it. We've talked about that till it
Yeah.
was beaten dead, but you know, that's impressive. I remember you keeping to that schedule in Boulder,
Yeah.
no matter what. So.
Well, I was always impressed that you could keep a story in your head. If I didn't, you know, for me, it wasn't just a matter of the discipline thing. It was that, you know, if I tried to hold a story in my head, I'd lose it eventually. Something else would come in and
Yeah.
sweep it away, or I'd be distracted by
Huh.
something. There's a, you know, I don't want to say it's like ADD, but I don't know how else to describe it. Kind of that,
Right.
I had to end up sitting down every day just to get the words out, but also to, you know, to stick with the same story. Otherwise, it just,
Yeah.
I mean, before I had the daily discipline, I used to have a notebook that would just have, that would be full of like these one or two sentence I story ideas, and I never wrote any of them.
Yeah.
You know, and didn't even try, didn't even get anywhere with them. And at least now with that day-to-day discipline for me, it forces me to actually write something, even if it dies after a paragraph
Right.
or, you know, a couple of pages. I followed that story until it just it tests those one or two sentence story ideas against the actual length of the page. And a lot is found wanting, but it still gets the stuff out.
Yeah.
'Cause yeah, I mean, I figure this is
That
a,
makes sense.
I hope, well, at least it makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the other thing is that I'm letting myself, that ability to you know, continue to pick up the story is also, I think, getting a little weak. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just because of the burnout. So.
Have you tried maybe writing something short just to kind of give yourself a break to feel accomplished that you finished something?
Yeah, I've tried rattling off a few poems. I write in the journal, of course, just to try and, you know, clean out the thought cobwebs, as it were. Keep the gears moving so that I'm actually putting together my own sentences rather than just editing the horrible sentences I see every day at work.
Yeah.
So now, did you finish? You read all of Laird Hunt's book, right?
Yes.
We talked about that already, didn't we?
A little bit, yeah. Very, very good book.
Yeah.
Very
That's
good.
next on my
He
list.
actually, you know, oh, that reminds me. There was he did that book inspired me a little bit. For a possible idea.
Oh, cool.
So I was looking at some one of my friends on Facebook had posted something about a female Nazi, some article about a female Nazi, and I
Wow.
started thinking about it, and I'm like, that would be cool to write a story from the perspective of a female Nazi prison guard.
Oh, right.
How do you make somebody like that sympathetic?
Yeah.
Because in my, I'd write it, I think, not from, not like she'd be like this, you know, at war in herself because she was doing these horrible things. I think she really, I think this character would truly believe in what she was doing.
Right.
And in the cause. And for me being Jewish, I think that would be an interesting challenge.
Yes, yes, it would.
Because I wouldn't want, yeah, because I wouldn't want to make the character, I wouldn't want to write it like, you know, to vilify the character.
Right.
I'd want it to be where you'd actually care about this horrible person.
Yeah. The ultimate test of empathetic imagination.
Mm-hmm. So that's something I'm kind of keeping in the back of my mind, how I'd like to research that if I ever have time.
Right.
And how I'd like to put something like that together would be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
New twist on Holocaust literature.
Yeah, it's easy to dismiss things and people like that as just monsters or horrible people or
right.
And that'd be really interesting pressed up against certain modern horrible people out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like our current you know, evil menace, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria.
Yeah.
That is some disturbing stuff, man.
Oh, no.
I look around the world and I see the religious extremism, the rampant, willful ignorance and embracing of stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
And I just,
I don't know. I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine experiencing such a fanaticism. But
right.
Towards anything. Except when I was, you know, 12 years old and was, you know, like obsessed with some boy band or something. But, you know, that's as close as I can equate it.
Right, right.
I kind of get it.
But
still.
I don't know where it's going or what's going to be the thing that'll, you know, because you look back historically and when humans get weird like this, there's always something that comes along that pulls us back, you know, into something more rational. I mean, you know, the Dark Ages eventually had the Renaissance, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The rise of Nazi Germany eventually had, you know, the Allies push him back. What's the counterbalance? How do you?
Yeah.
I think there's some of that. I don't want to say that I'm consciously trying to do that with this story, but there's some of it's there, you know, because I do think that part of the reason there's so much fanaticism is because I think people are beginning to realize that those religions and the mythologies that support them, that's all sacrilegious mythologies, are really becoming so dogmatic that they are actually the implementation of the rote dogmatic phrase, you know, has become its opposite. It's almost like Orwell's, you know, doublespeak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the religion says, you know, love your neighbor, and the actual implementation of it now has become shoot them in the head.
Yeah.
That's how you love your neighbor. And it's like,
Yeah.
I can't imagine that surviving much longer, but.
I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't know either, you know.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Crazy. I would like to see what you would do with that story, though.
Yeah, it was kind of sparked something. I did a quick Google search on books about women Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
not much came up.
Yeah.
Which actually made me happy. Because it gives me a little bit more freedom to do what I want with it if I
Right.
decide to do something with it.
Yeah. So did were there women members of the SS in that? There were. Yeah, there had to have
There
been.
were.
And they were in the concentration camps in the women's side. But so we know that they did exist, right?
Yeah. They did exist. So, I mean, I'm just wondering, like, wow, how can, I mean, just a twist on it, I guess, instead of just a, I don't know. I'm thinking about it. Because I visited a concentration camp before,
Right,
went to
right.
Dachau, and that was an experience I'll never forget.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Wasn't that where you ran into the chuckling foreigners?
I believe so. Yeah, I was in the museum.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck you. I don't know what to say. Just a simple fuck you. That was, that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. Did you, there was a, I'm trying to think where I saw it. It was, I think it was, no, it was a documentary, on Netflix that I saw. It was about the children and grandchildren of Hitler's inner circle.
Ooh.
And I wish I could remember the name of the documentary off the top of my head. But it's these, I think they talk to like the I think it's either this, yeah, it was a mix of the children and grandchildren of people like Hermann Goering and the real the best buddies and whatever, and guys who ran concentration camps, and these kids grew up in their parents' house, right next to the concentration camps, and they had little picnics and whatever. And they were talking about how they had little picnics in their yard, and just on the other side of the wall, they were killing Jews, and basically about how these kids are dealing with, the aftermath of that and the history of it, and their own, sense of guilt and whatnot. And one of the women they interviewed, actually, she moved to, I don't know if she met her Jewish husband and married him, and then they moved to Israel, or she went to Israel and met this guy and married him. But yeah, that's kind of like one of the ultimate thumb in the eye to the Nazi grandparent was, yeah, I married a Jew, fuck you.
Oh, yeah. That would definitely be that.
And there was one guy, he was the son of one of these inner circle people, and he actually his basically has made a living out of writing, basically denouncing his father and going around giving presentations in Germany and Europe about how evil and horrible the Nazis are. And, talking to people about his father, just kind of on this crusade, to you kind of feel like he has this interest in making sure that the whole world knows that he is not his father and he hates his father. And I think the most moving one for me was a guy who was, I think the grandson of one of the concentration camp superintendents who, he went out in search of a, I might be misremembering it. I need to probably watch the documentary again, but he went out in search of a particular journalist that I guess was the offspring of a survivor from the same concentration camp that his grandfather ran, and had a one-on-one meeting with him, and the two of them went back to the concentration camp, and the grandson of the superintendent stood up in front of a whole group of visiting Jewish people from Israel and all over the place, and apologized for his family. And it was, if I could remember the name of it, well, let me see if I can look it up here. And I think you might like it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's, remember the poster for the, yeah, it's called Hitler's Children.
Okay. I'll check that out.
And it might be on Netflix if you have Netflix streaming.
I do, yep.
But yeah, no, nice. It was shocking, very moving. So yeah.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's my obligation as a Jew to write something about Holocaust. That damn Jewish guilt. God.
Right. It's in the contract when you sign the student loan papers to go to get an MFA in creative writing, there's a something. Are you Jewish? Yes. Will you write a book about Judaism? The only box is yes. There's no maybe, just yes.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. Kind of course I'm taking it and twisting it.
It's about you know the biggest monster that the Jews ever faced.
Yeah. In this century or last century, anyway.
Yeah.
They face them a lot.
Yeah, that does tend to happen.
Yeah, nobody likes us. Fact. For whatever reason. You know, nobody likes us. That's okay. We live.
That is true.
We keep going.
A stubborn lot.
Yep. yeah. A lot of potential with that story, I think, but that will be something that will happen later, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, things will get settled down here once you get back in the habit, get the gears greased a little bit.
Exactly.
Once you get a little seniority at the job.
Yep.
So that you're not the the newbie on call all the time.
Oh, God. Yeah. That's pretty awful.
Yeah.
But I have to tell you, I value my own sanity a lot more after working that night.
Really?
There was some very, there was one guy, younger, probably in his 20s. It was his first psychotic break. They're thinking it's probably schizophrenia.
Uh-huh.
He'd been in college, doing quite well, and then lost it.
Wow.
And he stayed up all night at the nurse's station. Could barely understand him because of the way he spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Very tangential. He'd lose association. Just, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to what he was saying. He just kept saying, you know, I need to say the truth. I'm like, okay. And I said, you know, finally, I'm like, you'll get a chance to in the morning. Why don't you go to bed? You know, and could not redirect him to do anything. And just, it was really just quite sad.
Yeah.
I had a patient, go off and punch another patient in the face. It was fantastic. What am I doing?
There's some. That's some real humanity there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's got to be in. Do you still like it? I mean, at least working with the kids, with your normal stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I've bounced around to so many different things. It's kind of like, well, this is it. Stop bouncing.
Right, right.
You know? Because I think I'm never going to be satisfied with anything I'm doing. Because I know what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I want to do, you know, for a living. But I'm not going to do that. So I just, it's kind of one of those things where you just, you're like, well, this is my job and this is what I'm going to do. And
right, right.
You know, I feel bad. I know a lot of people that are nursing say, oh, it was a calling. You know, right. And I'm like, no, for me, it's paycheck. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, I like my kids. I get a kick out of my walk in and they're excited to see me. They're all like, Miss Laura. You know, and that's kind of cool.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's paycheck.
Yeah.
So.
What kind of, I guess you'd call them therapeutic programs or something. What kind of activities do they have them doing?
Not much. That's what's frustrating. They were actually, this is the ridiculous part, they were teaching, they had Taekwondo instructors come in to teach these kids Taekwondo.
Oh, yeah, that's what you want to do.
Yeah, teach them how to fight back. Yeah. Because we have to put hands on them quite a bit.
That's what you need. It's what you need is a young child that's in a psychotic break who knows how to shatter cinder blocks.
Exactly. I'm like, is this the most stupid thing I've ever heard? But the therapists are just worthless, in my opinion. They don't do much. I've seen them in action. They don't do much. There's very few activities. It's my poor techs running around putting out fires,
uh-huh.
trying to control everybody. Because we have 22 kids on the unit currently.
Right.
And we'll have one nurse and 2 to 4 adults, mm-hmm. and that's it. And when one starts going off, they all start going off.
Huh.
It's very sad, but there was one kid that we had. He has no psychological problems. He has behavior problems.
Right.
And he has them because of his mother, because she's an idiot.
Yeah.
This is, you know, basically, and, you know, his dad's in jail, has been in jail his whole life, you know, that kind of story.
Right, right.
And this kid earlier in the week had just a break. He just lost it. Was in 3 managements, so we had him on the ground 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
He ran away, or eloped, as we call it, 5 times.
Eloped?
It's ridiculous. Yeah, they call it eloping, and instead of escaping. And
that's a twist.
They transferred him to the acute unit, which he'd been on before.
Uh-huh.
And as this was going down, I could hear him starting to scream. He was on the other side of a wall.
Wow.
That divides the unit, and he was just screaming. And my boss came over, and she said, "Okay," because I had about 5 or 6 girls with me. She says, "Girls, go down the hall and turn around." And I was like, "Oh my god!" So I was like, "Okay, come on, guys, you know, let's go." I wouldn't even look. They carried this kid screaming bloody murder
right.
to the acute unit.
Wow.
And he got there, and my tech said, you know, my tech's name was Ryan, and he said the kid was saying, "Mr. Ryan, don't leave me. Oh, it was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard anybody scream the way that kid screamed.
Right.
It was just heart-wrenching to hear this.
Wow.
You know, so you deal with that sometimes, and most people at the hospital do not like to work my unit.
Right.
For that reason.
Hmm. Do you think writing would help them? I have a reason. You know, because they bring writers into prisons to work with prisoners.
Yeah. No, I don't think so. I really don't. They journal. They have journals they're supposed to write in. Some of the kids like to write.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them refuse. They don't care. That's the problem.
Right, right.
They don't want to focus on anything other than what they're feeling at that exact moment.
Yeah.
I've thought about that writing. I don't think it would help.
Yeah. Because that seems like that would give you, know, if it doesn't.
Yeah.
That
I thought of
sucks.
it too. No.
Yeah, I figured you did.
They don't. They're so lost in themselves. They don't. Nothing's going to come out.
Right. But you said there are some that like to write, right?
Yeah, and I've tried encouraging them, and they're kind of like, eh. They don't seem to really, they don't see it as anything but just, what they do. They don't think of anything
Yeah.
beyond that.
Couldn't even like sucker him into, you know, like a just a goofy, you know, poetry workshop.
No, it wouldn't work. Not with these kids.
They don't fall for goofy.
No, they're a tough lot. They're in a place they don't want to be. They feel completely trapped. They feel abandoned.
Right.
And they all deal with it in their own ways, but I got a 6-year-old there. Poor little kid. Jesus. He's about 2 feet tall. I mean, he's just this tiny little thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, really? You can deal with your 6-year-old? Really?
That just
You gotta,
seems so weird because, you know, my thing is if I were in a situation like that where I felt, you know, abandoned and isolated and whatever, I'd pick up a pen.
I know. I've tried.
You know?
They don't. They don't. It doesn't help.
I'd find a way to.
What they do instead is they cut.
They cut.
Oh yeah, they find something to cut with.
Wow.
They'll break a marker,
Even the
use a
boys?
plastic, and oh yeah, I've got two boys that cut, and at least half my girls cut. I've got an 8-year-old little boy who's learned to say, I'm going to cut myself so I can get my way.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. So that's how they get it out. They don't, it's all physical. Everything's physical.
It's all through pain.
There was a girl that checked in and had they were doing a body scan, and the tech noticed that there was a cut in her bra, like something was hidden in there. And she says, what's in your bra? The girl took out 7 razors.
Wow.
And I said, holy
Wow.
shit.
That's
And I
an.
counted up on the unit. I said, there's 7 girls here who cut. That girl could have just handed one out to everybody. Who could have had a disaster?
Wow, that's an addiction right there.
It is. They do. They just, if they don't have anything to cut with, they will use their fingernails. I've seen them just completely decimate their arms with fingernails. Erasers. They'll do eraser burns.
That's disturbing.
So they can't have erasers. We have to monitor their use of certain items. It's just very sad. But you're right. I wish they would find a different way to release energy, but that's how they do it.
Yeah.
And the therapists censor their books, which is infuriating.
Right. And then they tell
You
us
have to
fit.
approve books. And it's like, what?
And then they tell us family planning and birth control is bad.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh my God.
Because,
Yeah.
oh, I can't, couldn't imagine that. Those kids must feel so horribly unwanted by the whole world.
They do. So one kid I was talking about who was screaming, he's been in three facilities in the past year, and we're going to put him in a new one.
Oh, man.
Because we don't want him either.
That's like a fast track to prison. He's going to be a serial
Oh
killer
yeah.
or something.
Oh yeah. Thought about writing a nonfiction book called Raising Hell,
Yeah.
about working in a facility like this,
Maybe you should.
residential. It's once I've been there a little bit longer, maybe I might. I just it's insane what these kids go through, and that some of them don't need to be there. Like there's one girl who we were dreading getting. Heard horrible stories about her that she had smeared feces in the in her. Parents' drinking glasses. She had put bleach in their toothpaste.
Wow.
We're like, oh my God, the devil's coming. sweetest 11-year-old girl I've ever met in my life. Who never did any of those things, actually. It was all, and so what? She, her parents had left, her dad was stationed in Germany, and he sent her back here to Colorado to go to our facility. And so she was, you know, she's been here for probably 2 months, 2.5, 3 months. And she's finally leaving. She's leaving Monday.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, it's about time. And the kids, it's what's cool is they get so attached to you. Like, you know, she told me she was leaving and she's like, you know, give me a hug. And so normally we do, we call it a side hug. You know, you just put one arm around them.
Right.
So I gave her a side hug and I said, ah, screw it. I said, full hug. I gave her a big hug. You know, because I was just so happy she was going home.
Yeah.
Because there was no reason for her to be there.
Wow.
And it's just, I wish they were right. I wish they could find something like that, but they just don't. And they won't listen. They don't care. They don't want to get better, or they don't understand that they can get better.
Right.
My big thing is I keep telling them all, this is temporary.
Right, right.
This is temporary. And they sometimes it helps and sometimes it doesn't.
Right. Yeah, you're filling
I don't know, maybe in prison maybe it works with doing workshops better because they're there forever. Mm-hmm.
Right, right, right. And they're actually,
and these kids, they feel like they're there forever, but
right. Yeah, and the grown-ups, they're kind of, well, they're a little bit more intellectually developed sometimes, and they're
yeah.
able to, and they're able to, not able to, well, they're able to, and then they're kind of forced to kind of come to grips with what they did and who they are, and mm-hmm. have to
yeah.
find a way to justify
for
that.
These kids, yeah, for these kids, everybody else's fault but their own.
Right. And I think that's part of a, just a function of youth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And it's a funny thing. It's like I notice I look at them, I'm like, most of them are probably going to outgrow this.
Right, right.
They will outgrow it. Some may not. Some may end up checked into the unit next door when they're older.
Right.
You know, but a lot of them are just going to outgrow whatever their issues are. It's just their parents can't fucking deal with them.
Yeah, what are their parents like, and what kind of childhood did those parents have?
Yeah.
Oh, you're packing yourself full of stories, Laura.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're getting filed away. I'll tell you what.
Yeah, they're gonna start coming out of you sooner or later.
Yeah.
Whole new batch of crazy characters for you to run about.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and not the full on psychosis people, but. The subtle ones.
Right, right.
But, yeah, they're there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, maybe that's kind of why you had the dry spell, is that you ran out of crazy people.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm chock full of them.
I mean, you used up the crazy house people with, you know, with the ghost mouse mm-hmm. and
yep.
the girl yanking at her teeth. And
yep.
And
I just need more ideas.
What did you have left?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
That's got to be tough. That's got to be tough on you. I mean, yeah, it's got all the stories, but that's just got to be tough.
The toughest part, I think, is just the uncertainty of when I go in, not uh-huh. knowing what's going to be happening when I walk in the door.
Right, right.
I was joking with one of my techs. I said, next time I see you, I don't want to see you on the floor when I walk in. Because
right.
he was, two nights in a row, he was in the same position, holding somebody on the floor.
Oh, wow.
When I walked in, and I'm like, God damn it. And it's like, that's how I judge my night. It's if I walk in and somebody's in the quiet room.
Right.
Or somebody's in the management, I'm like, yeah, my night's going to be shitty.
Wow.
And so that's the only part that I don't like is the uncertainty. But I've mm-hmm. been able to keep quite the distance from the kids as far as feeling attached to them or feeling sorry for them or, you know,
right.
I don't take in their pain like I would normally do,
mm-hmm.
which is really good because that would be bad.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, because
I file it away.
Yeah.
For further use at some point.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, it's one of the trademarks of, I think, every writer that we admire is that capacity for empathy. And what you're doing has really got to test that, doesn't it?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it does every day.
I mean, at one hand,
And
it's
I
got to challenge it and want to kill it. And on the other hand, it's got to be like pumping it full of adrenaline.
Well, the key is too, in working with those kids, is most of them respect me as far as, well, they don't respect me, but they just, I don't know what the word is. But they know I don't belittle them. I don't blow them off. I won't, I'll try to help them. The kids love to call people bitch, cunt, you name it.
Right.
They love doing that. And I was talking to the lady I work with overnight, and she goes, "They don't call me that because that they respect me." And she's a hard ass. So I knew that. I said, "You know what's funny?" I said, "In the four or five months I've been here, I've never been called that either."
Right.
I'm like, I just realized that. It's really interesting. Nobody's ever called me a bitch, no matter how angry they get.
And they call everybody a bitch.
And they call everybody bitch. They call the 70-year-old unit manager a bitch. And she
Wow.
was funny. She responded by, "That's Miss Bitch to you." I'm like, that's awesome. She's this tiny little lady, tiny, tiny, tiny thing. She's probably about 5 feet tall and maybe weighs 80 pounds.
Right.
And she runs that unit. She has been for 30 years.
Amazing.
Like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest on,
Right, Nurse Ratched.
kids, yeah, on Nickelodeon.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Do you know if she's like kept tabs on any of the kids that have passed through the unit? Does she, I mean, do you guys occasionally have news of success stories, kids that go through there
No.
and
No, we don't hear anything.
well, maybe that's good
Wish we
and
did.
bad.
It's good and bad. We hear when they come back. It's
Right.
when they come back.
Yeah, I
But
guess maybe that's how you have to deal with the good news, is if you never hear from them
if they don't come
again,
back, exactly. If they don't come
you
back, it's
did all
good.
right, you know.
Yep. Exactly.
Wow. So how does it compare to teaching English?
Well, it's funny, it's because I had the trouble I had with teaching was classroom management. I had trouble, and now I'm doing that all day. That's my job. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
The sane kids you can't deal with. The insane ones you can handle.
Yeah, I know. You're kidding me. So I think I would have actually been a better teacher if I had done this first. But maybe I'd been a better nurse for doing teaching first. I don't know. It's one of the two.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows?
It's a trade-off. It's
Yeah.
either that or deal with the adults or deal with really, really sick people, which I know I can't handle.
Yeah.
So,
You could go become an Ebola
yeah. Exactly.
no.
Very funny.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Some
But anyway.
interest, some news, some
Yes.
little news. Let's see. A couple of weeks ago, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, I got a couple of rejection letters
Oh.
on the same day.
Oh. God.
But there's still a number of places that I submitted to earlier in the year that haven't responded. And
Okay.
about a third of them, I just am, you know, that's how they're going to reject me. There's a couple of them that I know that it's they and they say it on their website. It's a small staff, you know, that takes them a while to review manuscripts. So I still have some hope for a couple of them. So I don't know. And I've been talking with Stephen McClurg and Eric Jenkins, who are a couple of guys that I started up Eunoia Solstice with. And Eunoia Solstice, as we originally kind of imagined it, the website that the podcast is associated with and everything, is kind of, you know, because of our schedules and what we were trying to do with it, kind of the leaderless, community based thing. Oh, good grief.
Right.
I'm a lazy idealist when it comes to art. I think other people should be as, you know, motivated to do it as I am. And sometimes they're not, which is not, I'm not saying anything against Steven or Eric or the guys that we were working with. I'm sure they're all working on their own projects, but taking the time, you know, to submit to the posts with the website and everything it's a bit distracting. Steven still does little billboards every now and then. Eric is our kind of our technical manager, but he's going to be a father soon, and he's been relocating. He's now in Pennsylvania, I think, and teaching English. And also trying to write. So they're all, Stephen and Eric both, they're, you know, families and teaching and writing and all sorts of stuff. So it's been kind of hard for us to even get together to talk about what we're going to do with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're looking into is turning it into a micro boutique press.
Oh, cool.
That's the idea. So we're chasing a few things down, and I'm going to drag one of your stories from the project for a new mythology into this. We're going to see if we can, what it's going to take for us to actually produce a book.
Cool.
And we're going to try and make an anthology out of a bunch of the old Project for a New Mythology pieces.
Well, that sounds cool.
So I'm going to drag something of yours out of there.
There wasn't much, but...
You had a couple of things in there.
A couple things, yeah.
You know, for a while I looked back at the Project for New Mythology and I thought, oh, this is just crap. It's just me goofing around, farting around, or whatever. You know, and then I take a look at it, and, you know, it... I'm not going to... It wasn't by any means brilliant or groundbreaking or whatever, but, you know, I had some interesting people in there who are still writing and doing really, really interesting things. And I managed to talk them into letting me, you know... publish for nothing.
Yeah.
Something of theirs. And paying in contributors copies. And we had a few issues that were just really, I still look back and I think, God grief, I did that, really?
Yeah. yeah, it was pretty cool.
You know, it's particularly that it was issue 3 where it had the CD, you know, it was bound in the envelope and everything.
Yep.
That was the high point of my my creativity. You know? So, we'll see ya. We'll see.
Well, that sounds very good.
I'm in trouble. I have a problem with my laptop. Every now and then the light on the screen will blank out. So it's still recording. Everything's working. It's just the little light that illuminates the screen has shut off.
Yeah.
And sometimes in order to restart it, I have to close the lid on the computer and put it to sleep.
Oh. That sucks.
Yeah, it's a good thing we've been talking for an hour, because I don't know what the hell we've been doing.
That's,
that's the thing. So do you think by the next time we get done, or by the next time we talk, we'll both be done with Station 11 and we can have a nice deep conversation about that one?
Most likely.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's my goal.
That'll be the goal. I'm going to take some notes. I want to pick your brain.
Yeah, I think I should be able to get done with it.
So what's your schedule look like for November and into December? How's the what's going on with the family and
Family's coming out for Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Grandma's coming. My brother's coming. I took Thanksgiving Day and the day after off,
Oh, cool.
and working the 3 days before it. And yeah, I
When's Hanukkah land this year?
think it's like December 16th, 17th, somewhere in there,
Okay.
kind of in the middle. So the schedule's kind of the same. Just, let me know kind of the general time you want to talk, and I'll let you know what my schedule is,
Right.
and we'll pick a date.
Don't want to disrupt the family things too much.
Well, yeah, you too.
Oh no, there's actually
Are you guys doing anything with your mom or?
well, my sister's not going to be coming into town, so it's just going to
Oh.
be me and my mom. And being single, I don't have to worry about navigating the extra girlfriend's family rituals.
Yeah, exactly. Actually,
Yeah.
it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I guess there were times when we were together where I thought, God, I don't want to do this anymore. And I'll probably be sitting around at some point this Christmas going, man, I could have been doing the thing with the girl and the thing and
Oh,
whatever. Wah, wah.
yeah. Oh.
Oh, well, fuck it. What are you going to do? Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you a ring here in a little while. We'll set up the next one.
Okay. I'll have
And
Station 11 done.
we'll get Station 11 done. And I think I'm going to send you some pages.
Oh, that'd be great.
Because one of the things we need to get you Skyped up so we can look at each other.
Yeah.
And
Well, my computer just died, so I have to get a new, literally, I'm going to have to get a new computer tonight.
Okay. What are you going to
So,
get?
I don't know. Just another laptop. It
Right.
died like the other day. I brought it down. My dad put a new hard drive on it, and it died again. So
Oh,
I'm like,
wow.
fuck it. So we're investing in a new computer, so maybe something better that will handle Skype.
All right. Well, it's
Yeah.
good talking to you. I like having these
Oh, you too.
conversations. I don't know
Yeah,
how
sorry I
you.
talked so much about work. It's just going on the brain, but.
No. No, that's good. I think it's interesting that we just have a human conversation. Maybe
Yeah.
the people that will listen will find it interesting. Maybe they won't. Maybe we'll drive them
Maybe they
off.
won't.
I
Yeah.
don't know.
That'll scare them off, yeah.
But I think we're doing all right. We'll see how they
Yeah.
like it.
Sounds good.
I'm gonna have to do something weird to the computer here. There we are. Still there? Okay, good. I think I had to have it back. Yes, I've got it back. I can see everything now.
Oh, good.
So what are you gonna do this weekend with your free time?
Having dinner with the parents tomorrow and probably clean the house.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Exciting stuff.
Well, get some more red. I'm gonna be reading.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Or I might just watch episodes of Arrow.
I was like, we're all watching TV.
Whatever. But
Yep.
yeah, check out that documentary, Hitler's Children. I think you'll
Absolutely,
get a
yeah,
kick
sounds
out of that.
good. I will.
All right. I will. Let's sign off here real quick. Say goodbye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, don't go anywhere. All right, and there you have it, Shop Talk number 4 with Laura Holly. Come back in 2 weeks. Looks like I'll be talking to Peyton Marshall. She's the author of a new novel called Good House. I think that one will be fun. I haven't talked to her yet. I'm looking forward to that one, and we'll get that out in a couple of weeks. So, yay, I'll see you in 2 weeks. Did that didn't sound. Let's just stop it now. Yay.